This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? At work, in social settings, around your family? BetterHelp Online Therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self, so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Dee Knight of the Pardon the Insurrection podcast. We're about 26 days away from the November 2024 election, and there is a lot to talk about, so we get into it. But before we do, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Dee Knight. Welcome back to the show, Dee.
It's a pleasure to be with you yet again. I always miss and enjoy our conversations.
So do I, and I was totally looking forward to it because, you know, sometimes when I have certain guests on who I actually really like and enjoy, but I have to do all this, like, hardcore prep work and everything, and I know that you're one of my guests that, even though I do prep work, I don't even really need to. There's so much, like, we could just easily talk about so much of the stupid crap that's going on, and that's what we're going to do today.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I'm not excited about the existence of so much stupid crap, but sure, I'm excited to have a conversation about it.
All right, so I'm going to start this off with something that I didn't get my own tweet, but something that I've been feeling is that I feel like there is a silent majority that can't be picked up from, you know, our current polling and whatever we're doing out there, because we've got corporate media that wants a horse race, and we've got the what is the name of that polling center that Peter Thiel owns? I can't think of the name. Polymarket. And Simon Rosenberg is warning us about this, because Polymarket is making it seem as if Trump is ahead, and it's bullshit. And anyway, before I get into the bullshit polls red wave thing from 2022, there was an article that said, "Door knockers, polls are missing secret Harris votes who will reject Trump." And this falls in line with my idea that there's a silent majority. There's no accurate way right now to be able to understand what's actually happening out there. And so it is my feeling that we're going to be seeing a very solid electoral. Christopher Boozy's prediction map is 349. He has Iowa and Ohio up as toss-up states, although he is going to, at probably this Sunday or the next Sunday, he's going to put out his new projection map, which I'm sure will be fairly close to this one. So I'm not going to say I'm predicting. I'm just saying I think it's possible that we could hit 349. My map does not have those two states as toss-up. I just gave them to the red. And with Florida going blue, Pennsylvania blue, it takes us to about 349. So my prediction, I don't even like to make a prediction, but I think what is possible is anywhere from like 320 to the Obama map in 2008, 365, somewhere in that range. And I just wanted to know how you're feeling about this.
Oh, I mean, if Kamala Harris somehow manages to pull off Florida, yeah, it's going to look like Obama numbers. I don't know what the likelihood of that is. Like you said, Boozy's the math guy. So he probably has a better insight on the likely probability of some kind of massive electoral college swing in Harris's favor. But yeah, we can pick apart the silent majority thing, right? So I don't know if this necessarily shows up in polling just because of the way the sample size for these polls work.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be totally surprising if in a month from now, the day after Election Day, we look at some of the numbers and we're like, Trump had this, 10, 15, 20 percentage point fall off in terms of votes from inside the party. It mimics what happened during primary season, right? So one of my big takeaways from the primaries that gave me the impression that Biden was doing extraordinarily well, or at least was on pace to match what he did in 2020, was that in terms of the primary vote, he was getting, you know, 89, 90, mm-hmm. 91, 92% in most states. Mm-hmm. And then Trump, on the other hand, even though his competition was Nikki Haley, was only getting like 78, 79, 80%. So it was like, Trump's supposed to be this super dominant force. He's supposed to have 100% ubiquitous support in the Republican Party. And here Nikki Haley is eating away at his vote share, even though she's out of the race at this point. And that shows just a level of dissatisfaction with what you might term that normal conservative. I don't know if such a thing even exists at this point.
Right.
but that showed an extraordinarily thorough vulnerability, yeah, in Trump's vote share when it comes to just the average Republican voter. And I think I was seeing somewhere where there was a poll taken on Nikki Haley voters, and somewhere around 20% of them said they wouldn't vote for Trump no matter what. Now, I don't know if that means that they're going to vote for Harris. Probably not. I wouldn't assume anyone at this point is undecided about whether they're going to vote for Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. It's a decision about whether they're going to vote or not. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, you know, you multiply all of those weaknesses together, you're probably going to have a lot of Republicans not able to hold their nose and vote for Trump at this point. Probably not going to pull the lever for Kamala Harris, but we'll take whatever we can get not voting for Trump, especially in some of these swing states that Harris needs, like North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That's really all she needs, because there's no path to victory for Trump if he can't even manage to pull off North Carolina. He could win Michigan,
right,
and lose North Carolina,
yeah,
and still lose. So that's what we're hoping for. I think, I mean, the excitement for Harris, I would say, is probably near Obama levels in terms of the Democratic Party. I don't know what that means for, you know, non-party affiliated voters or independent voters. I honestly have no idea. But we're hoping for the best. But if there's any indication that Harris is faring a lot more well than Trump, you see she's raised $1 billion in 3 months.
I know, it's insane. I want to find, okay, I don't know where this was from, because Bob, my boyfriend, and I were talking the other night, and
he's Bob, your boyfriend.
My Bob, just in case there's a new listener. Anyway,
we might know him more accurately as Bob Seska.
Bob Seska, yes. Thank you. Bob, my boyfriend, he's feeling better now, but he's been quite agitated, right? Just like, he's so irritated with undecided voters and all. And I'm just trying to be like, look, there were undecided voters in the Reagan map during the, you know, Reagan time. So, and even during Obama's election in 2008, and the mainstream media is focusing on them as if they are representing this huge part of the, and they're not. They are not representing the majority of us. So I'm not going to worry about these idiots who are undecided at this point, if they even exist. But regardless, Bob was asking me, he's like, I wonder, you know, how the Nikki Haley voters are going to go. So he sent this to me, and it's a blurb from, I don't know where he got it, but it's some source. So I wish I had the source, but I don't have it, because he deleted his tweet, and I think he redid it, and I can't find it. So this is, it says, if the election were held today, Donald Trump would win just 45% of those who backed Haley in the GOP primary, while 36% that they would back Harris. The new poll shows, and that's the new poll, and it's 781 registered Republicans and independents conducted by the new Democratic-leaning polling outfit Blueprint. So it says the poll did not include Democrats. So that's interesting. And, you know, I have here, okay, let me get to, these are the headlines that we were seeing, and this is three of them. In 2022, Wall Street Journal says Trump sees red wave in election, but says Senate in flux. Newsweek says a red wave is coming. The only question is, how high will it be? And then CNN, the red wave is building fast. And then I have on top of this little meme that I made. It says, it's a Brookings Institute midterm exit polls show that young voters drove Democratic resistance in the red wave. And it's also all about abortion. And so my theory here, which I don't think is very difficult to get to, is women are always underestimated. This abortion thing is a big fucking deal. And it's not just abortion, because there's all these other things. There's whether it's climate, whether it's student loan debt, whether it's insulin prices, whether it's just, you know, democracy itself, or Trump being the babbling old man that he is, talking about the late, great Hannibal Lecter every 5 minutes. I just think, and it's not a Pollyanna thing, you know, I believe we're going to see a huge number that we're not expecting. And, you know, I mean, Boozy is, it's so funny. I know you've seen him fighting with Evan Power, who is the Democratic GOP chair in Florida. And
it's been hilarious.
Oh my God. It's like that trolling is my favorite, like part of my favorite reason to be on Twitter right now. But, you know, we all know, and I've said this before, but Boozy has said it. He's got a big fucking ego. He's like, I have an ego. I'm not going to say Florida's going to flip if I don't think it's going to flip, because I don't want to have egg on my face. And so he keeps doubling down on Florida. It's like, and you know, he's talking with Nikki Fried. I think he did a town hall with Nikki Fried, who is, the Democratic GOP chair? Okay, anyway, Evan Power is the GOP chair in Florida.
You know what you
mean. And then Nikki Fried is the Democratic chair. And so she believes that it's also, I don't know that she's going all the way to say that it will flip. I think she's being cautious, but she's saying it can absolutely flip. And Michael Steele predicted that it was going to flip. So I feel pretty safe that it's going to flip. I mean, I don't know. We'll find out on Election Day, hopefully. If Florida flips, Trump is fucked. Oh my God.
I mean, if Florida is even close, Trump's probably fucked.
Yes.
I mean, because look, that has implications demographically for states like Arizona, North Carolina, Georgia. Like, if Florida is even remotely close, then in all likelihood, he's lost the blue wall. He's lost North Carolina.
Yeah.
He's lost Georgia. Maybe he's got a shot in Arizona, but Arizona is so up in the air because, like you said, abortion is a huge issue, and that's going to be literally on the ballot in Arizona, as well as Florida for that matter. So we've been having it rubbed in our faces here that Republicans have this supposed, you know, million active voter in advantage in Florida, and it's kind of an illusion,
yeah,
right? Because, you know, the deactivated voters, they're not unregistered. They can show up to the polls, mm-hmm, and vote. They don't have to do any extra work to make sure their vote is counted. All they have to do is vote. And if you start looking at some of this early voter data in terms of the amount of mail-in ballot orders, there's no real advantage. It's not a number that's too far off from like 2016 per se. Mm-hmm. So you would expect, if there was an actual million vote advantage for Republicans, mm-hmm, that it would show up in some of this early voter data. And it's not. And let's not forget, Ron DeSantis initially won his first election as governor by a handful of thousands of votes. It's entirely possible,
yeah,
if not plausible, that the election in Florida is going to be extraordinarily close. And if it's going to be that close with these level of stakes, including abortion and legalization of, mm-hmm, cannabis on the ballot, like, anything could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Boozy has pointed out that those two things, like, if people are going to vote for, you know, cannabis and they're going to vote for abortion, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to vote for Harris. But I think in this particular case, I think, yeah, I mean, there is, I just, you know, take away all of the data and the obvious information out there. When you just go on what happened, you know, in on that day when Kamala Harris was, it was announced that she was a candidate, you know, Joe Biden was so smart to do this, even though so many of us were frightened, including Christopher Boozy, that this was going to go in a completely different direction with a open primary and brokered convention and 1968 hell. We were all afraid that was going to happen. And then, you know, Biden's like, fuck this shit, it's Kamala, and you're going to get behind her. And then everybody did. And it was like, you know, I'm going to go back to what I was saying initially, is we saw the fascists defeated in England, and then we saw the fascists defeated in France, and now it's our turn. And, you know, we see Kamala is the candidate, and everybody, almost fucking magically just falls in line. It was something to see, you know, and that momentum has only continued. Her poll numbers continue to rise. And I feel like when things like this happen, and this sounds a little woo-woo, but I mean, I don't know how else to talk about it. It's like, these are like movements. This is an energetic movement that can't be stopped. And I think it could be stopped, but I'm just saying that it's like, I think it's on the trajectory to just fucking ram through. And it feels that way to me. I don't know. Does that feel that way to you?
I don't know about feeling. I wouldn't quite put it that way. Okay. I mean, let's say that debate had never happened, mm-hmm. and you know, it was still Trump and Biden on a collision course in November, with basically the stakes still the same, and without like the media's determination to make Joe Biden a one-term president. I think I would be feeling a little bit more confident. Because it'd be less variables involved. And also there's just like the psychological hurdle of getting people to press the button by the name of a candidate they've never voted before. I mean, it's a real thing. Like, it's just so much easier to convince people, hey, you voted for this thing once, turned out pretty good, just go ahead and hit the button again, no big deal. But with the injection of the excitement for Kamala Harris added into the equation, but also the fact that there are probably a lot of Democratic voters who were hesitant because they don't know Harris well enough. You know, probably prudent voters who feel like they may not know her policies well enough, although she could, you know, claim some credit for the path the Biden administration's taken. Maybe that'll assuage some of those concerns. But I think what the real difference might be is, you know, when Biden dropped out and immediately endorsed Kamala Harris, I think, obviously, and we knew this would happen, if Harris were to become the nominee, the first group to get behind her in total support and solidarity would be Black women. Mm-hmm. Right. And that happened immediately. They mm-hmm. raised millions of dollars overnight. They showed that Harris had the support of, if not the entirety of the Black community, at the very least, Black women. Mm-hmm. And Black women might be the margin of difference that gives Harris, you know, the top break in a 50-50 election in cities like, you know, Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You know, 10, 20, 30,000 more votes than Biden might have gotten otherwise. Might be the difference in winning PA. Same for Detroit and Michigan. It's just the margins could be so slim that having, you know, the Black voters in major cities in swing states be the difference between utter disaster and absolute victory. Now, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't try and equate my feelings about that possibility with the likely reality because, you know, again, who knows?
Well, I know New York Times isn't going to be calling up and saying, how do you feel, Kimberly, about this election? What are you feeling?
No.
And I get that.
The New York Times is not going to be calling up any Democratic voters and asking us how we feel about anything.
That is true.
Well, Biden got more votes than any presidential candidate in the history of the country, and you've never seen the media in any form or fashion talk to a Biden voter once. Right. Not a single time.
No. They like to just go to the diners and talk to the idiots. But, you know, it's funny that you say that because you're definitely more cautious than I am. And I'm not criticizing that in any way. I'm just noting it. And it's funny because, you know, I know these are just all little anecdotal things. But when I'm out and about, I like to ask the young people, you know, are you registered to vote? Please make sure you register to vote. I never tell them how to vote. And so there was this one particular guy, and he told me, this is when Biden was still the candidate, and he told me that he was not excited. He was going to vote for Biden, but he just really wasn't excited about the election. And I said, are you familiar with Joe Biden's record? Do you know what he's done? And he said, not really. And I said, well, you should look at it. I said, you should just go home tonight and Google his record, and you'll really be impressed with what he's been able to accomplish. So anyway, we have this conversation, and I come back after the Kamala's the candidate, and everything changed with him. It was like he was animated, where before he was kind of just like dull, you know, like, And he was animated and he was excited. And I, you know, I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell you because it's so funny. This, I talked to this Gen Zer, and I know she was you know, she's a Democrat. So I, prior to that, I didn't know, but I said, you know, are you registered? She goes, oh yeah, this is the most important election. And so I said, it absolutely is. And then, you know, so we were talking about why it was important. And I said, are you excited about Harris? And she's like, oh my God, yes. And I said, what about your friends? And she said, oh my God, they're a little too excited. Maybe they're paying too much attention to this race. And she goes, I don't know. There's this thing, political Twitter. Have you ever heard of Twitter? And I just looked at it. I was like, oh my God. Okay. Yes, I've heard of Twitter. But, you know, she was all excited. So I think, you know, they are representative. They're anecdotal stories, but I think they're representative of young people, because one of the headlines on 2022 was Gen Z showed up and saved Democrats because of abortion. I mean, I'm going to throw women in there, throw black women in there. All these people showed up because of abortion, but Gen Z got credit. And I think that we're going to, I think that she was able, you know, to not so much counter your point, but to address your point that people felt comfortable with Biden and, you know, they've already voted for him once. I think there's a huge group of young people who were not excited about him. And maybe they would have voted for him, but they're like chomping at the bit to vote for her. And I'm really hopeful and excited about that because, you know, black women, white women tend to let us down. So
hey, I'm sorry. You don't have to be white. You can transition. It's fine. Come on over. Michael Jackson took the opposite approach, but we'll take you back in exchange.
But, okay, now I'm going to switch the subject. So I'm sure you saw this yesterday at his rally. Donald Trump, I don't know her name, but went after the female host, the young woman who hosts Call Me Daddy and the, you know, the podcast that interviewed Kamala Harris. I can't talk today. Anyway, so Trump referred to her as a dummy like four times. And oh my God.
Yeah. It, probably so not stupid. Smart. I mean, one of the biggest podcasts in the United States, reaches a lot of young women.
Young white women.
Yeah, they love that girl.
Yeah.
and then Trump is at his rally on TV, not only referring to Kamala Harris as dumb, but the podcast host is even dumber. Yeah. And not smart.
No,
but that's, you know, classic Trump stupid. Can't help himself. Always got to be on the tack. Nothing ever subtle. None of that. No.
What an idiot. Because, you know, a portion of these listeners, I don't know that all of them will, but a portion of these listeners will hear this and it's going to piss them off. And it's like, I don't know what we're going to see with white women this time because abortion is on the ballot. I'm hoping that white women as a voting bloc fucking wise up because it's just unbelievable. It's, you know, I mean, and I just want to say when a white woman who's listening to my show, if you're on social media and you see somebody say, you know, especially a black person, but it doesn't matter who it is. If somebody's saying, you know, white women vote for Trump, please don't answer with not this white woman, because it's the same thing of not all men. Just don't pull that shit. Yes. White women as a block fucking disappoint us. White people as a block voters disappoint us. You know,
hey, look, white women, if you start voting for Democrats in just a simple majority, we'll start giving you credit. That's all we're really yeah. asking. Just, you know, 50.0001% of you go the other direction. We won't blame all white women for this. But until then, it's too many white women. No yeah. offense, you guys.
No,
but
it is. It's too many. Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, that's what I always say when I go after men, because God forbid if you say men do this thing. Oh, my God, the butt hurt. Not all men, not me. I don't do it. And it's like, I know not everyone does it.
I'm a man and I see that shit. I'm like, yeah, fuck them guys. But it's no, the absolute truth of the matter is that if you're self-aware enough to know that something may not apply specifically to you, yes. but generally applies to the demographic you're in a way that's not like some caricature or some kind of stereotype, and you have a level of empathy for the people who have to deal with the outcomes yeah. of those situations, then you feel as though it's kind of somewhat your responsibility to make some kind of change in the way those things work. So when you know when men are accused of being XYZ or whatever issues it pertains to, you know, the differences and the way our genders interact, I'm like, yeah, men kind of suck.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We should be doing better. Like, you know, I'm not personally affronted by an observation that's accurate. So in this particular case with white women voters, been letting us down for a couple hundred years here.
it's so upsetting.
You know, not that you were always able to vote, which, you know, you would think.
Exactly.
Would kind of imply that, hey, maybe you should come over here and join the other marginalized communities and we can do our own thing without these white guys ruining shit.
Yeah, it's really disappointing.
Look, and specifically with abortion, it is tough because it depends on the woman's, you know, personal interpretation of what abortion means. Is it about like an unborn child, or is it about women's rights and women's self-care? And you can typically kind of just, you can assume based on which side of that aisle an individual lady might fall upon, how she will see the issue and how she'd be willing to vote. I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate that we've allowed disinformation to be weaponized in such a way that it creates incentives for people to vote against their own interests. But hey, that's been the history of voting. There are far worse options, though. Dictatorship, perhaps, where you have no input whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But again, this misinformation is typically used to get people to give up their rights and end up in a dictatorship. Fingers crossed we can avoid that. But yeah, in terms of like how that specifically will play out in November,
It's going to be close.
It's always close.
Right.
Biden won by nearly 7 million votes. And in the end, it came down to less than 100,000 votes in a couple of swing states. Same in 2016. Mm-hmm. I mean, Florida in 2000. We all saw what happened there.
Yep. Yeah, so I mean, that's why, okay, I think that, I do think we're going to see a higher electoral number than Biden. Biden was 303. So I can't imagine that based on the excitement around Kamala Harris, the deterioration of Donald Trump. I mean, I know a few people, you got the Nikki Haley situation going. You know, I know a few anecdotal situations where there are Republicans who can't bring themselves to vote for either one. You know, they don't like Kamala, but they can't vote for Donald Trump. So I think he's losing support. I think that she's picking up support. I really believe that. And I think we're going to get to a place where we're going to see, you know, the projection that I was saying earlier, but I'm not worried about the American people per se. I'm more worried, you know, about what is the shenanigans that are going to happen after the election. Obviously, if we have a higher electoral number, we can look at what happened in 2020 and see that he was unable and unsuccessful to overturn the election, that a lot of Trump-appointed judges wouldn't even have anything to do with this, and like, fuck you, Donald, no. I think we're going to see pretty much more of that, but that's my concern. Like, I'm not so much worried. I'll be worried on election day because, oh my God, all the stakes will be right there. But, you know, right now...
I suggest you smoke a bowl.
I'm going to have to take all kinds of drugs on that day and just like wake me up in a week or whenever she's announced, but however long it's going to take. But are you based on what you see, and I'm asking you how you're feeling based on what you're seeing out there from like Mark Elias and, you know, all the information that we're seeing about what's happening in Georgia, like, are you concerned about what he's going to do, or do you think we're going to be able to get this done no matter what, however he fights it?
I would say in terms of winning the election, I'm somewhat confident that Kamala Harris is going to win. Mm-hmm. Just the problem is always if the margins are too small, you're going to find a way to cheat. And of course, look, we've got Supreme Court justices who were on the ground for the Bush campaign in Florida in 2000. Finding a way to manipulate the vote count in order to ensure Bush's victory. Now the Supreme Court justices, I mean, I'm entirely certain if there's a lane for them to step in and steal this election for Donald Trump, they're more than willing to do so, because we've seen that they're more than willing to step in and try and bail him out of his criminal jeopardy. So I would just, you know, I'm fingers crossed hoping Kamala Harris can pull off something like winning North Carolina and Georgia outright. And making sure, well, along with the blue wall, and making sure that there's not a real path for, you know, the Republicans on the Supreme Court or state legislatures, local judges, to do anything to put their finger on the scales. Because if it's close, like, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but it's going to be chaos. Yeah. They're going to do something crazy. They're going to commit some kind of massive fraud. And if it comes down to one state, it's probably going to be civil war. You know, not like the 1800s, mm-hmm. probably not millions of Americans dying, but it's going to be something closer to a massive January 6th. And we can't let that happen. Now, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, figuratively, because the FBI has been, they've done such an extensive investigation into January 6th in both the physical plot to attack the Capitol, but also the plot to overturn the election through mm-hmm. fraudulent means, that they're keeping an eye on some of what could consider to be, you know, Trump's co-conspirators. Maybe they've got an eyeball on numerous different plots to try and steal the election. So if anything should pop up, they'll be ready, fingers crossed. And I mean, again, part of the reason why law enforcement was caught by such surprise in 2020 is because we ain't never seen any shit like that before. Mm-hmm. Like, right. Maybe it's been, since the late 1800s where we've seen anything remotely close to a violent coup designed to overturn an election. We just weren't prepared. But now that you saw what happened, you can be prepared for mm-hmm. other possibilities, or at least that's, I'm assuming that's what the Department of Justice and the FBI are doing, and they'll keep their eyes open. So should any shenanigans take place, they'll be ready to, you know, swoop in, hopefully save us before it can get out of control. Yeah. Although,
just thinking about this overwhelming.
The problem is, there's always the opportunity for the courts to get involved, and there's not much they can do in that regard because, sadly, judges can just rule however they want to at this point. It'll get kicked up to the Supreme Court, and they're in the bag for Trump. So
that's true, and that could happen. So I can't even go there in my mind because I just feel like, I remember in 2016, the night of the election, I was actually feeling quite confident, which I don't know that I'll ever feel quite confident on election night again. Just because of that.
Well, you weren't wrong to feel confident. Hillary Clinton won.
She did.
She got nearly 3 million more votes than Trump.
Yeah.
It's just, we have this minoritarian system called the Electoral College that gives a disproportional weight in terms of Electoral College votes to smaller, more homogenous, majority white states. And, 70 years ago, the Republican Party was like, hey, that might be our path to victory, as we're losing more and more of our hold over the majority of Americans. And, effectively, mm-hmm. even though they've lost so many elections in terms of the popular vote, Electoral College has been there to save them quite a few times.
So, yes, it has.
And in that regard, really is an effective strategy.
It's very
but
upsetting.
You also weren't wrong.
No, I know. But it was just the idea, I didn't think in terms of the Electoral College. Like, none of us were thinking none of us thought, obviously Russia was helping him, and this has been proven. But,
In 2016, I was like, all right, fine. The Russians are helping Trump. What can they realistically
exactly,
do?
Exactly.
And I didn't understand the vast impact that they were actually having in terms of influencing people's minds and positions mm-hmm. and voting habits. And at the very least, they were probably responsible for, hundreds of thousands of people simply just not voting. Mm-hmm. That might have possibly voted for Hillary Clinton. And then you throw in the Green Party, third party candidate,
Jill Stein.
Whose existence was solely to siphon off votes from Hillary Clinton. And then you throw in an FBI director deciding at the last minute to make a public announcement mm-hmm. that he was reopening an investigation into Hillary Clinton with no real new evidence. There were so many factors involved in what led to that narrow victory / loss for Hillary Clinton that it's impossible to replicate, especially now that we don't live in 2024 independently of what happened in 2016, right? So any informed voter is going to look at what happened in 2016 and realize that, hey, now that we've seen that happen, that's a possibility. Let's not let that happen again. So I would assume that regardless of whether people were feeling a lack of enthusiasm for Biden and now they're feeling more enthusiastic about Harris, they probably weren't going to take the chance to risk it because, again, in 2016, Trump's argument was, what's the worst that could happen? And then we all saw it for 4 years. That was like, you know, we're on the path to the worst possible outcome. And people are, I would assume, again, I can't speak for everyone, I can't read minds, but I would assume that there's a percentage of the population. It's like, hey, we've seen the worst that could happen or close to it. Let's not go down that path again. And apart from all of those other various factors that played a role in the 2016 loss, they don't exist currently. And it's a lot more likely that Harris is probably going to pull it out because people take elections seriously now. I mean, that's that was the ultimate result of the Trump administration. Just people taking the shit more seriously, which typically is bad for Republicans.
Okay, we have to take a quick break, but we'll be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly, the host of the podcast you're listening to right now. If you're not already a patron, please visit patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tiers. Choose one and support the show today. Thank you. All right, now I'm going to switch over to the information we got yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I can't even keep up. About Trump giving Woodward's book and saying that Trump gave Putin COVID tests in 2020. And then the Kremlin verifies this and says, yes, this happened. So I'm just wondering, why did the Kremlin say, yeah, this happened? They have no, like, I asked this question on social media and I got a lot of responses like, oh, he doesn't care about Trump anymore. And it's like, okay, that's fine. He may not care about Trump anymore, but he still wants American democracy to fail. And this information is, if it's going to help anyone, it's going to help Kamala Harris. And I don't, you know, I mean, obviously there were quite a few people who became never Trumpers after the Helsinki situation with Putin and Donald. So I don't, you know, and there was an anecdotal story on Twitter, which of course, you know, take them all with a grain of salt, but it was like somebody said their neighbor had voted for Trump twice. And then when he found out about giving these tests to Putin, he said, that's it. And this guy's voting for Harris. I don't know if this is a true story, but I do think it's absolutely possible with some percentage of people who are, you know, maybe teetering with Trump, this could have been the line. But I mean, do you have any idea? Like, one person said, the only thing that made sense to me is why the Kremlin would admit this is that Putin likes to own the libs too. I don't even know why this would be confirmed.
Well, first of all, can I say, as a non-journalist, I have more journalistic credibility than Bob Woodward. Like, stop saving these massive stories for your fucking book to sell a few extra copies, man. Yeah. Like, I just, Jesus Christ. Like, this shit's too important. It's too important to the country. It's too important to the electorate. It's too important to the existence of our democracy for you to sit on this shit until your book is published. Now, that out of the way, I mean, I'm assuming, because, you know, what little I do know of Putin's psychology is that he's a sadist. And I'm assuming that having a Kremlin spokesperson confirm this story on the record is more a shot at Trump personally than anything. It is to let him know that whatever Trump has done in secret, you know, to the benefit of Russia or Putin specifically, that at any time he could have that information made public in such a way that would be extraordinarily harmful to Trump. And this is how he keeps his finger on Trump. And I'm assuming, you know, Trump has a similar relationship with the people in his employ. So I wouldn't be totally surprised if there are things that people have done for Trump. And Trump is holding it over them to ensure, you know, some sustained loyalty in the face of adversity. And, you know, in that regard, Putin and Trump are a lot alike. And if we go back to, you know, 2016, It's like history always repeats itself. One of the major issues for the transition, I'm sure you'll remember, and probably a lot of your listeners, is the incident with Mike Flynn and the Russian ambassador, mm-hmm. where he's making secret promises to the Russian government to not respond to the sanctions that were placed on them by the Obama administration as they were outgoing for the interference in the 2016 election, saying, hey, we're going to be in power soon. Don't retaliate. We'll take care of these sanctions. We'll hook you guys up. Don't worry about mm-hmm. it. And then, you know, the story breaks. Flynn's interviewed by the FBI and saying that, no, that conversation didn't happen. We didn't make any such promises. The story breaks to the contrary. And then poof, they're in, you know, enraptured by scandal before they've even made it into the White House. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. The issue with Flynn at that point is because he had made a public statement that was contrary to the truth, and the Russians knew what the truth was. He was subject to possible blackmail mm-hmm. because the Kremlin had information that they could hold over Mike Flynn. And this is the same exact instance, except it's Trump himself. And like, again, this story, like, this is like Iran-Contra level shit, mm-hmm. you know, minus the drugs, I suppose. I mean, the guns and drugs are a lot more fun than this, but it's basically just as big of a story that the president of the United, or former president of the United States, who's, you know, possibly weeks away from regaining power, could possibly be subject to blackmail mm-hmm. by a foreign adversary. No one cares. Mm-hmm. Where's the media coverage of this? How is it not wall-to-wall, back-to-back, 24-hour-a-day news coverage that are, you know... I've given up hope on the media. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I have, too. And in fact, you know, I said yesterday on Twitter and on my social media accounts that, honestly, looking at the way the Harris campaign is messaging, I believe we're seeing a new kind of messaging coming from the Democratic Party. I think... providing they keep this up, it's just only going to improve. All the stuff that everybody was like, oh my God, I wish the Democratic Party would get some balls and, you know, get some backbone. They are. And they are mocking Trump in a way. I mean, just the debate alone. She broke his head. She broke his mind. And she did it in a way where she didn't have to sink to his level. She didn't, you know, the way that she responded to him when he said stupid shit and the stares that she would give him, and oh my God, it was masterful. And I think that because she is, and I'm going to call her Gen X because she's Gen X, she's got a Gen X.
She's close enough. I'll let you steal her away. It's fine. She's not a boomer. She's Gen X at heart.
No, I mean, she's a Gen Xer, and she has a new... She has a kind of an understanding that, you know, I mean, you've got Biden, who's a traditionalist, and, you know, everybody criticized him for wanting to and actually reaching across the aisle, but he was effective. He was effective at doing that because he's been there forever and he has those relationships and he understands the psychology. I think with...
And it's genuine. And it's not a show. That is who he is as a person.
Yeah, no joke. And, you know, it's like he's such a good guy, and... like you said, it's genuine. So now with Harris, she's got a completely different energy. And then she's got a social media team who is fucking on it, man. I mean, as soon as a stupid... they go and there's plenty of things that they can find that Trump has said, you know, the late, great Hannibal Lecter shit, all of that. That's all there. And they can make videos about that. But I mean, as soon as he's at a rally saying something stupid, 3 minutes later, it's already up. It's already an ad. And, you know, they're so good at... mocking. I mean, I remember there was, I don't know who said this quote, but the quote was basically the best way to combat, you know, Nazis is to mock them, because, you know, they like it when we say we're afraid of them. They like it when we talk about how dangerous they are, but they don't like to be mocked. And if you look at Donald Trump, I mean, there was that story where I think his brother dumped mashed potatoes on his head and he was completely humiliated. And so, and then here comes the mashed potatoes on his head memes. But no, nobody has been able to get under his skin the way Kamala does. And it's so funny because, you know, you're watching the polls going up for her, and then he goes back to Butler, Pennsylvania to try to, like, get everybody upset about him, that attempted assassination by a fucking Republican, by the way. But I mean, that's how desperate he is. He's like, look, I almost died. Remember that? Remember that? I mean, that's how they're so fucking bad at this. And I think, and the Democrats are getting really good at this. And I think, and I hope.
That I don't know about the Democrats, but yeah, Kamala Harris's team, yes. For sure. I mean, one of the complaints I had about, you know, Biden's team over the existence of his campaign, you know, obviously 2020 was, he was ideal for 2020.
Yes.
Because he's such an empathetic, warm, caring figure. So mm-hmm. that may have potentially been an outlier given yeah. what we were dealing with. With, I don't know, bodies being stacked up in freezers and trucks and being buried in mass graves. So, okay, great. That was like, you know, that was your moment. Right. You rose to the occasion in that regard. Because it fit you. But hey, man, you got to get some real shooters on your team. Yeah. I don't mean like literal shooters like at the Trump rally. I mean like figuratively.
Right.
You have to have some people willing to engage in the, like, in the trenches mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, where you're willing to take shots at your opponent. And it just, they never had that. And it was so frustrating.
Yeah.
And I was pulling my hair out for like 2 straight years. Like, where is everybody? Why is no one? And then Kamala Harris steps in and immediately she's like, hey, man, we cut this shit out. It's time to get serious. We got to get out here and have people out on the attack constantly. And as you said, so, you know, for the authoritarian or the wannabe authoritarian, being feared is validation.
Right.
And yes, and being mocked is where it touches a nerve. So you have to strike this fine balance between taking the threat of what they stand for and what they're proposing seriously, but not taking the person, the mm-hmm. individual, the, you know, the persona that they project seriously. So it is a fine balance, but if you can strike it, it is utterly demoralizing to have not only your supporters, but their supporters as well, laughing at their candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can manage to find a way, a vein or a lane where you can pull that off, it's extraordinarily effective. And that's probably why, you know, Trump is obviously still obsessed about those comments that Kamala Harris made about his, you know, the average Trump rally just being full of insane and mundane comments. And as someone who watches, you know, I don't watch all of them because that would drive a normal person insane, but I consume a good half of every other rally.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure you have to stay in the competition shop because you got to know what they're doing.
Exactly. So
you
can compete.
And then I watch these rallies and it's like mind-numbingly stupid mm-hmm. or boring mm-hmm. or insane. And it's exactly what Kamala Harris said it mm-hmm. was. And if the average person would actually just sit down and watch these and not like the media trying to sane wash yeah. the incredibly stupid, insane things he's saying, this election would just, it would have been over. It would have long been over.
And it is the media's fault. And, you know, what I was saying, you know, I mean, back to what you said, how the media is disappointing you, let's say the corporate media, independent media. And that's another thing. I mean, you're right. I said the Democrats, and I'm going to go back to the Harris campaign, because I think what's going to happen is she's leading the way in messaging. And I think eventually it will trickle down. I hate to use that term, but I think it will trickle down to the party. And, you know, and we're seeing a whole new way to talk to the electorate. And I think it's effective. I think they're doing a really good job. And I think
I mean, it's not totally new. They're just turning into, you know, myself and my fellow satirist on
right.
on the Twitter and taking it mainstream.
Yes.
Like, you know, this the conclusion that we all intuitively came to on the Twitter was like, as serious as this is, as potentially harmful as this is, there's no real way to break this man's hold on, you know, 30-40% of the population mm-hmm. without pointing out how astronomically absurd it is. Now, the media, they are intent on doing the opposite. They're, you know, completely determined to take the most insane comments and make sound inundane, you know, perhaps remarking on Trump's fascination with genes and genetics as opposed to labeling what it is, some Hitler-esque, you know, animal or dehumanization
yes.
of the Jew type language. But hey, I get it. So for them, They're like, hey, in case, you know, your listeners aren't aware, the media environment is dying as far as mainstream corporate media. They need every single click, every single ad dollar they can get. And they're well aware and understanding that a Trump administration means they get to survive at least another 4 years, presumably, if he doesn't have them assassinated first, thanks to presidential immunity. That aside, you know, they're taking the gamble that we'll make it through 4 years with some semblance of democracy intact. Mm-mm. And all of this Trump insanity, they'll finally be able to cover it for what it is. But until then, like, it's baked into the equation that they're not going to do anything to harm Trump's chances if they don't have to. It is extraordinarily frustrating.
Well, but you know what? I think that it is causing independent media now to kind of take over Trump, Trump the corporate, Trump the legacy media, because you've got Kamala Harris going. She's like, fuck you, New York Times. I mean, she did go to 60 Minutes. That's kind of like, you know, we always used to think in terms of the New York Times as this big, you know, institutional magazine that we could always trust, and there's a new owner and now it's for shit. So, but at least with 60 Minutes, it's been around forever. It's like an institution in this country. And she did say yes to that, which was great because Trump said no. And right at the beginning of the show, they said, okay, he said no because we fact check. And we always, I mean, first of all, I can't even fucking believe that it's being sane-washed that presidential candidates are openly whining about fact checking, and it's not a bigger deal. It's like that alone should cancel. There's so many things alone that should cancel them out, and they just don't even fucking care. But what's happening, I think, is this mainstream media that, you know, young people are not watching. They're listening to the Call Me Daddy podcast. They're, you know, and then you've got she did the Howard Stern show. She did The View. All these audiences, and I think Tim Walz last
night. She did All the Smoke, a podcast notoriously popular with the you know, middle-aged black male community.
Yes.
Some shit that Trump can't ever do.
No.
Yeah, all of these.
No way. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how she was received by those listeners, but I think that was, you know, it was the smartest possible move, because it's like, just bypass Andrea Mitchell, who's going to ask her stupid fucking questions like, well, Trump said you weren't black. What do you have to say about that? And it's like...
Hey, that's another thing. So we don't talk about this often enough, just generally speaking, but like, if you're watching a mainstream media outlet, you know, your listeners may or may not be surprised by this, but there are a lot of people who have these major broadcast jobs who are actual Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. Like, they're in the bag for the guy. Now, I don't know if that's because, you know, generally they know him personally and they like him, or they like his politics, or because they're on the payroll. I don't know. But we do have quite a few of them who were just in the bag for Trump. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll give one example that everyone knows. I don't want to out anybody, but Katie Turd, perhaps. you have to understand, with even a network like MSNBC that's presumably left-leaning, a lot of their talk show hosts and journalists, for that matter, are not only right-leaning, but Trump supporters. And that's a supposed left-wing outlet. So imagine what something like a CNN or an ABC, we don't even have to get to Fox News. You know, what these other outlets are like and what their employees actually think and believe, and how that changes the way the stories are framed, how they cover the news, and how they interview. Like, it's some insidious shit. And I'm not saying, you know, there's anything wrong with being a Republican or being right-leaning, but at some point you have to draw a line between what is acceptable and what is not. And they do not do that.
No. No, because what they do is they take the slurs that he says and then frame them as questions, just like, you know, Trump says you're not black. I mean, if someone said to me, you know, so-and-so said you're not white, how do you respond to that? It's like, no, I don't even respond to that, because it's fucking stupid. And that's what they're doing. So it's like Harris is just bypassing them and going straight to...
Yes, they're upset about the fact that she feels as though she doesn't need mainstream media to compete. But also take no responsibility for their behavior in creating this environment where it's beneficial to be a flagrant liar and a fraudster and a cheat and a demagogue. Like, well, then what incentive does Kamala Harris have to play into that system in the first place? They ignore that part.
Yeah, some reporter asked Biden, you know, are you going to tell Trump to stop, you know, I think lying about the hurricane. And Biden just looked at him like he was stupid. And it's like, why aren't you asking those questions? That is your job, media, to ask him those questions instead of trying. Oh my God. And like Biden. Yeah, that debate was fucking horrible in June.
What is the purpose of the media? If not to give as accurate as possible a picture of the landscape to the populace as possible. Like if that's not their job, I don't know what is, but they refuse to do it. They've refused for nearly a decade.
Yeah, because they've become, it's all about money. It's broligarch people owning the news media. And so I think that even though it's uncomfortable and, you know, providing we can preserve democracy this election, I think we're going to see more the rise again of independent media. And it's going to change the landscape. And sometimes, you know, I'm trying to find the silver lining here. Because it's very upsetting, but the silver lining hopefully will be that in order for that to fall apart, you know, we're watching that right now. The way that they're falling apart is by not really telling the truth, by painting a picture that Trump is ahead or Trump is, you know, I keep seeing people say that this election is so close, and I do get that it's close, like you were talking about. It could come down to a couple, you know, 80,000 votes or something like that, even if she wins some ridiculous landslide. But I don't believe that they're accurately painting the true picture of what's happening. And it's like, you know, we were talking earlier, they're not going they're not interviewing Democrats. They've always interviewed MAGA. And nobody gives a shit what MAGA has to say anymore. I mean, I was on the phone with, you know, oh my God, I just have to take a second to complain because I've got a, you know, MAGA relative. And it was her birthday, and so I call, and we don't really talk about politics, but what she'll do is she'll throw something out there, like they always do it. They always fucking do it. I don't, like, Democrats don't do this, liberals don't do this, but the Republicans that I know, when they're talking, if a Republican or a conservative, I don't even like to call them conservatives, but if they, you know, and she's full-blown MAGA, so she will, like, what she said to me was, I don't even remember how we got to this, but we were talking about food and she goes, oh yeah, you know, and she said it in a way that I would agree with her that, you know, Bobby Kennedy is right about all the shit in our food and it needs to be, you know, examined and blah, 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 blah. They're allowed to put anything in our food. And so I thought, okay, usually what I do with her is I try to find common ground if I can and move on. So I'm not going to lie. Yeah, there's shit in our food that's not great. We have all this processed food that's making people unhealthy. But Bobby Kennedy is not the one I'm going to listen to. You know, the guy with the fucking dead worm in his brain who, you know, cut off a whale's head and strapped it to the top of his car. No, not taking advice from that guy. But she talks to me as if we're in agreement. And, you know, like there was this one time when she kept saying,
I mean, but she's not entirely wrong. Bobby Kennedy, in some degree, does have a point. There's a lot more, you know, chemicals in our food that would be toxic in large doses. And but like the second you would be in disagreement with her as you told her that the solution is for the FDA to regulate the companies and make
exactly
sure
it's the FDA,
and then she'd be like, well, that's unacceptable.
Right, she wouldn't. It's like her brain would explode. And, you know, and the same thing, it's like it was a while back and we were talking and she, you know, I don't talk to her very often, but I do, and I please don't give me any shit, anybody out there, I'm gonna keep talking to her. So she, you know, I mean, and I can't convince her of anything, so I don't even try. I just try to ignore when she says, but she brought it up because I guess it was, you know, one of the lawsuits where she was concerned that he was going to be stripped of everything he had. And so she says, well, you may not agree with him, but you have to agree that it's not fair that, you know, they take everything from him. And I said, you and I can't have this conversation because we see it differently. Well, you may see it differently, but you have to agree. And I said, I do not see this the same way you do, so let's not talk about it. And I think I had to say that about 7 times until she finally backed off. And, you know, because it's like, I'm not gonna, there was a conversation.
Has she ever had a divorce? Like, did she
no.
take her ex? Okay, well, all right. I was trying to find some kind of personal experience.
No,
she's
just,
she would understand
she
from
is one of those brainwashed MAGAs. And, you know, and it's really, and it's weird because when she was younger, she, you know, she's in her 70s, but she would mock the John Birch Society, which is basically, you know, for those who don't know, it was started by Father Fred Koch. and it's, you know, the Tea Party, and the Tea Party evolved into the MAGA. So, but I remember back in 2012, I asked her, who are you supporting for the Republican primary? And again, I will never talk to her about, you know, politics per se, but just outside of, you know, who are you supporting? And I'm not kidding. She started screaming at me about Obama. So I just kept, like, I had to raise my voice because we were on the phone. I had to raise my voice and say, I'm not interested in Obama. I want to, you know, I'm like, and I had to talk over her. And I wasn't screaming at her. I was just raising my voice because she was losing her fucking mind about Obama. And it was like, I'm not talking to you about Obama. And this went on for like 5 to 10 minutes where she was just yelling and yelling and yelling. And I just kept saying, who are you supporting? And finally, she said it. Oh, my God. Ted fucking Cruz. She was supporting Ted Cruz. So, I mean, this is where her head is at. And
do you remember that, how quaint the days were of, oh, you know, I'm a Ted Cruz supporter. Like, how did we get from there to, I mean, you know, Ted Cruz is a moron, but right. Generally speaking, largely harmless, at least a decade ago. No, I mean, and like, I don't understand, like, with these types of people, you have to ask them questions like, well, you know, how do you feel about, you know, Trump being the pro-America candidate and then selling $60 Bibles that are made in China?
Yeah, or, well, I,
you know, perhaps how do you feel about Trump, you know, lying about immigrants in Michigan eating cats and dogs, right. And as it turns out, it was actually a white male who was consuming, you know, these animals.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, how do you feel about Republicans insinuating that there's some secret program run by Democrats to control hurricanes? The
weather. Well, I mean, it was, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel. I don't know. Somebody who said, you know, when there was a weather problem in, how did they get it? I can't even remember what it was. Whatever it is, it just proves they're hypocrites. Fucking Marjorie Taylor Greene is a knuckle-dragging hypocrite. And I, you know, I keep seeing Joy Reid on Threads saying, you know, I'm out of the country right now. And all I'm hearing from people in, you know, the countries I'm in is, wow, Americans are really fucking stupid. It's like, and then I saw, who was it?
We know.
Yeah,
They continue, the Republicans, they continue to try and kill the education system.
Yes. For decades, they've been successful at it. They've defunded education. The funds never get back in place. And we've got what we have. We have, you know, Trump loves those, what did he call them? The poorly educated. And that's why. Because they, you know, they just eat up everything he says. And if they're angry about something, he gives them permission to be angry about it. And if they're racist, he gives them permission and all that shit. And it's like,
no, I understand that Twitter is anecdotal, but when I saw that post with the arrows pointing to the states and the Gulf, it was like, oh, Texas, Alabama, Florida. How is it that these hurricanes only hit red states? And I'm like, well, typically because you can't have a hurricane originate over land.
that's kind of why. It's like, but I mean, we, you know, look at California. I mean, the fires are insane. When I first moved to California in 1977, there was fire season, and fire season lasted anywhere, I don't know, it was like September to maybe mid-October, and then it was over. Now, it's like all year round, and before I left, okay, when I was living in Southern California and moving to Northern California, my big send-off was literally the biggest wildfire in California's history, which now it is not the biggest because something else came along and it's bigger than that one, but it was outside of my window. I had my entire apartment, I had these like sliding glass doors, and it was the whole wall. And so I was looking at the San Gabriel Mountains on fire every single day, and I was getting robocalls, and it was terrifying. Nothing happened to my home. But then I moved to Northern California, and I don't remember the name of it, but they had that firestorm there, which was, it, like, I think it was 80 mile an hour winds. And there was a fire, and, you know, the embers jumped the freeway, and it just obliterated neighborhoods in the flats. And, you know, I mean, it's getting to a point where, and it was so awful because, you know, I would go after the fire, I would go to a store, and that was I lived in Santa Rosa, so it was a very small little community. And you would see, you know, people knew each other there. So you'd go into the grocery store and you'd overhear these conversations where there are, you know, two people who know each other would say, how did you fare? And I mean, so many times I heard people say, I lost everything. I, you know, I only have what I'm wearing. And so it's not just hurricanes. there's crazy weather all over the place, but they, you know, and then they just say it's a hoax or there's weather patterns. It's like, oh my God, we need to get out of this. And I believe the only way we do this is through voting, because eventually we can at least get back to where we were. I mean, I would hope to get to a better place, but there was a time when these racist, bigots, misogynist idiots were afraid to say their lunatic theories because they knew they would be mocked. But now it's like, you know, everybody just accepts it. It's like, what the fuck is happening?
It's true. It's just crazy. Then, like, again, they don't pay any price for these absurd stories. And then, like, you know, in the instance of, you know, say aid for disasters, we just had the Trump aide come out on the record and say basically you had to explain to Trump how many voters voted Republican in California before he would send aid to the state, because he thought, like, just because the state was majority Democrat that it was 100% Democratic vote. I'm like,
because you're so fucking
stupid. That's not how it works.
No.
God, but, like, we get stories like that all the time. And again, back to the media, they never make Trump. Like, all of these things that would literally sink any other candidate, including George Washington, from the beginning of the United States, they never make Trump pay a price. And you're like, this is unsustainable.
Yeah, it is. And so, I don't know, we just got to win this shit, man. We got to win. I think we're going to, but I just so remember the 2022 election night, I lost my fucking mind. I had to go on, you know, Mary Trump asked if I would be on her show. I've told this story before, but I'm telling it again because it's funny to me. So I see, you know, before I go on her show, because it's at night, I see that DeSantis wins and Rubio wins. And I'm like, oh my God, the governor, you know, governor race and Senate are not gerrymandered and they won. So I thought the red wave was going to happen, even though prior to that, I was optimistic. And I lost my mind and I threw a fit. Poor Bob had to watch me, like, just unravel. And then, you know, and then I go and I get on the podcast and I'm like in the waiting room and it's literally just me and Jennifer Rubin. And it was like, oh my God. And so I didn't know what to say to her because it was kind of awkward. So I just started expressing my fear and, like, Jennifer Rubin was calming me down. I just think that's the funniest story. It's like, who would have thought that would have happened in my life?
Jennifer Rubin being the voice of reason and the voice of calm in a conversation with anyone. That's just a miraculous occurrence.
That was insane.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I do believe that should we have a fairly decisive, I mean, I guess the best possible outcome would be not quite so decisive a victory, but a victory enough so that Republicans can't cheat, but also not such a massive victory that they decide to entirely pivot away from Trump. I mean, you wanted to be close enough for half the party to feel like Trumpism must stand, and the other half of the party to feel as though they must rid themselves of Trumpism forever, because that's really what happened to the Whigs. Yeah. If the Whig party imploded because they did not keep up with the times and they were, you know, in competition with the newly formed Republican Party along with the Democratic Party, and all of the voters left and moved on to something different. And hopefully, you know, we can repeat history yet again and have some evolution of the Republican Party where the name of it no longer exists and it's replaced by maybe some neoconservative party that might get along and get us back to a track of semi, you know, normalcy in our political landscape. Fingers crossed. Like, I'm not entirely sure. I thought that would happen after 2020. I was wrong for a couple of reasons, largely because, well, Trump controlled all the money. But once Trump is out of the picture and there's no one person dominating the money spigot, I suppose it's entirely possible that we could see a number of new faces step in, fill the void, compete to the death, Rudy Giuliani style, and end up imploding the party from the inside to create something new and not quite so totally. I mean, you know, I would assume there are a lot of Republicans who left the party after, you know, the advent of Trump, who were probably chomping at the bit for that to happen so they could step in and take over.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible. I mean, you know what? I will say this, though. I know we have to wrap up, but even if there's a big blowout, I think that there could be the idea that the Republicans are like, he is being rejected, and this whole Trumpism thing is being rejected, and we have to figure out a new way. Because obviously, if they just keep losing, they're going to finally get it at some point. Wouldn't it be amazing to have two parties who would fight over how they could better benefit the people, you know, in a realistic way? That would be great. I that's what government should be. You know, obviously,
well, we'll never have that because there's too many moneyed interests. It'll have too much political sway, and then some equilibrium will be a party like the Democratic Party or just the pro-democracy party. And then, of course, the, you know, the pro-extreme forms of capitalism party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the inevitable equilibrium. But hopefully, if the party implodes just enough, the likelihood of them having any sort of success nationally will be stayed for maybe a generation, and maybe we can, fingers crossed, get a lot of work done before they come storming back.
Well,
with force.
We can dream, right? There's a possibility that can happen. So maybe we should just like focus on that, visualize that, put it out in the universe, and maybe it'll take hold. And obviously we have to vote and volunteer. I think I'm going to be doing phone calls for Colin Allred. Just even though Boozy doesn't believe, I'd like to hear what he has to say about him now, but his prediction on Allred was that he would lose because he doesn't feel that Allred is embracing the Harris campaign as much as he should. But, you know, we did see it was a September poll that he was ahead by 1 point. I think it was like leaning Republican now as opposed to full-blown Republican. So I don't know if he's going to make it, but I figure, you know, I'll do some phone calls for him, because there are women in Texas who want to be able to have some choice, and hopefully that will make a difference. I don't know. We'll find out. But it's just always fun talking to you. I could talk to you for another 2 more hours, and we didn't even get to Jack Smith, but that's okay, because after the election, I will be inviting you on. If Trump wins, I cannot guarantee I will be mentally well. So I don't know how that's going to, but I'm just going to assume Kamala Harris is going to win because we're all going to do this. And then I will have you back on and we can discuss the new Jack Smith indictment. And I'm, you know, really hopeful about that because it would happen in D.C. And this is not about, you know, the other one wasn't hush money, but it was election interference. But this is way serious. This is January 6th. And they've got smoking guns all over the place. So we'll have that to talk about when we win. But before I let you go, as per usual, tell everybody where to find you.
Yes, you can find me at or on, you know, formerly known as Twitter, at Black Knight 10K, the I Smoke guy. That's pretty self-explanatory when you see it. And also on Part of the Insurrection podcast, where podcasts found, on YouTube as well. And look, if perhaps by some chance Trump does happen to win, the people, the masses will be so hungry for some independent media that you'll likely become a millionaire. So you got something to look forward to.
I don't know about that, but okay. I'll just pretend that might be true and try to keep that in mind. But anyway, all right. Well, it's always good talking to you, and thanks for being on the pod again.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? At work, in social settings, around your family? BetterHelp Online Therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self, so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.